Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the fourth quarter conference call for CESP, the São Paulo Energy Company. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded. After the company's presentation, we will have a questions and answer session for analysts and investors. If you need help during the conference call, please dial star zero to speak to an operator. We will also be streamed live online with audio and slides, which can be accessed through CESP's IR website through the address ri.cesp.com.br. This presentation is also available for download on the website. The following information will be given in BRL according to Brazilian accounting standards. They are already in conformity with international accounting norms, except when stated otherwise. Before we continue, we'd like to clarify that any statements made during this conference call related to the company's business perspectives, projections, operational, and financial goals are merely the company's beliefs and assumptions based on information that is currently available. Future remarks are not a performance guarantee because they involve risks and uncertainties and assumptions. They refer to future events that depend on circumstances that may or may not come to pass. Investors should understand that the general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operational factors may affect the future performance of the company and may lead to results that differ materially from those expressed in these forward-looking statements. We have with us Mr. Mario Bertoncini, CEO and Director of Investor Relations, and Marcelo de Jesus, Financial Director. Mr. Mario Bertoncini will begin the presentation.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for listening in to our call. We will now begin our earnings presentation for the fourth quarter of 2020 for CESP or CESP. As we normally organize this event, during the first part, our CFO, Marcelo de Jesus, and I will show the main highlights for this quarter and for the entire year. We'll give you some highlights of the company's performance, and during the second part, we'll open up for questions from you. We'll begin on page four, which shows our highlights for 2020. 2020, of course, was extremely challenging for everyone because of the COVID pandemic. There are four factors that were very favorable for CESP last year. First, the resilience and quality of our clients' portfolio. Secondly, I'd say it was the ability of reacting quickly to the pandemic and the adjustments that needed to be made. Third, our management continued to have discipline and control costs and expenses. And the fourth is how robust our capital structure was. Although it was a very difficult year, socially, although it was very challenging, we suffered no material impact from COVID-19. We continue to work from home. Right now, 82% of our workforce is working from home remotely, and in operations, our operations continue normally, both in Porto Primavera and Paraibuna, with contingency protocols in place. Last year, our average generation was 1.03 gigawatts, which is 9% above our physical guarantees at CCSP. And of course, this follows ONS guidances. Our availability level continues to grow, and we have reached, by the end of 2020, an availability level of 95.7%, which is quite high for the industry average, especially considering plants the size of ours. In terms of our financial performance, we concluded the year with an adjusted EBITDA of 1 billion BRL. This is 35% higher than the results we posted in 2019, and it is twice as much as what we had in 2018, which was the year before we took over the company. We continue to reduce our contingent liabilities. Before correcting for inflation, we reduced in 2020 our contingent liabilities in 2.9 billion BRL, which we'll go into details soon. We also concluded the year with an operational cash generation of 743 million BRL and a cash conversion index of 73%, which is quite good considering what our forecast was. We concluded the year with net income of 1.7 billion in 2020. Marcelo will give us some details on that result soon. Finally, after the deliberation of our board, we are going to pay proceeds of 850 million BRL or 2.59 BRL per share. A part of it, 150 million, will be through JCP, which has already been posted last year, and the remaining 700 million will be paid out in dividends. This is a dividend yield around 9% for CESP. In trading, we concluded in equalizing the 2020 energy balance. Our purchasing price was 17% lower, and we were able to gain in EBITDA in comparison to the previous 2 years. Finally, we took the opportunity in how the energy prices were impacted by COVID to accelerate how we were equalizing the energy balance for 2021. And now it's 91% equalized. So the energy balance for 2021, as we usually do, will be posted in the next quarter's results, in the second quarter of 20, excuse me, the first quarter of 2021, where we'll give you all the details, megawatts, average price, according to the standards you already know. We are 90% equalized, as we said. So after the worst stage in prices in mid-2020, in the second half of 2020, we resumed long-term sales. We were still focused on 2023 to 2025, but we were able to move forward, and this year we've basically equalized 2023, and we're now focusing on 2024 to 2026, according to our selling policy, our plan, and the discipline that we have in executing these sales. Continuing on page six, we see our contingent liabilities for CESP. The bar graph on your left-hand side shows our evolution until the fourth quarter of 2020. In the fourth quarter, we started in September 30th at 11.3 billion in total liabilities. We had a money correction during that fourth quarter, representing 483 million BRL, and expressive reductions in these contingencies in the fourth quarter of 1.6 billion BRL, as we see here in the bar. This is a reduction resulting from three factors, which you already know. The first is the negotiation, which we concluded in the fourth quarter. We concluded some contingent negotiations. It also has to do with favorable rulings for CESP. So cases that were already in the appeals court and have already finished. And another important factor, which is a continuous review of estimates according to each lawsuit. This quarter, there was also an important adjustment due to how these estimates are calculated, especially corrections, valid counterparties, and other requirements, always backed up by our legal department. What we're presenting in the middle bar graph is how we have evolved over the year. This is seen in the same format, but for the entire year. So we started our year with a total contingency of 11.4 billion. Correction for inflation had a major impact because about two-thirds have been impacted by the IGPM index. So we had a correction of 1.7 billion and consolidated reductions of 2.9 billion, as we can see here. So with that, we finished the year with a likely liability of 1.74 billion, which is totally provisioned for, as we can see in this graph here. Finally, I think it's also important to mention that for this reduction of 2.9 billion in our liabilities, we disbursed 115 million BRL for the entire year, of which half, that is 63 million BRL, were disbursed during the fourth quarter of 2020. So here we see the breakdown. There was no significant changes in these contingent liabilities. One third, as we see in the pie chart, out of the total is in civil lawsuits. The other third, civil lawsuits for fishermen related to fishermen specifically in the Paraná River region close to Porto Primavera. And finally, the last third are miscellaneous civil lawsuits, some of which are environmental, some of which are labor, and some tax lawsuits. Page 7 shows our active liabilities in Três Irmãos and some updates for you. With regard to the trial court lawsuit, the judge in July 2020 had made some decisions. First, they requested the lawsuit to be digitalized, and this was concluded in December last year. Following that, as he had announced before, he opened a period for the expert to give his opinion. So this 15 working day term was started on January 24th. Excuse me, 28th, and would conclude now on February 19. The day before yesterday, on Wednesday, February 10th, we heard that the expert had passed away. So we got the death certificate for this expert. We're now in contact with the court judge to understand what the next steps can be and what will happen now. It still has not been defined. We are still not clear on what the next steps will be when it comes to this lawsuit. As soon as we know, we will make it publicly known. So continuing on page 9, we see some comments on the energy market. I'll summarize this slide by basically saying what our view is on the energy market in the fourth quarter of 2020. The fourth quarter basically had some important changes in our expectations in the middle of the quarter, around September to October. In September or October, we started first to see an important increase in the load and the consumption of energy. This can be seen on the right-hand side graph on page 9 in this curve upwards shown in dark green. This is energy consumption concluded in 2020. So this curve upwards in September or October is related to this load increase. This was not totally expected by the market. A big portion of it, maybe the biggest portion of this increase, is due to high temperatures and higher commercial and industrial use of power in refrigeration, besides, of course, home use. In September and October, we also started seeing low rainfall, far below the historical level and our expectations. On the left-hand side graph, when you see the gray area, we see our ANE, our affluent natural energy levels, and it comes close to the minimal record, which is 41% in October 2020, as you can see. This led to a quick depletion of our reservoirs. Our reservoirs had reached a peak of 60 to 61% in mid-2020. But because of COVID, because of the lower consumption, it's 10% higher than the peak in 2019, as we can see in the green curve on the left-hand side. And it depleted quickly. So in December, our ANE was around 25%. Excuse me, our storage level was around 25%, which is very close to the previous year, starting at a peak which was 10% higher. Due to all of these factors, we basically had dispatches above average, and we had to import energy from October last year. So these extraordinary dispatches and imports led to a worse GSF, which led to a price increase, which is typical of this season, this part of the year. So megawatt hours were up to 500 BRL during this time. So this is a snapshot of the fourth quarter of 2020. It was not easy for hydroelectric power generation. A part of it could be foreseen, another part could not. And this led to certain effects and certain results in different companies. On page 10, we see the energy balance for 2020. I remember I had shown this to the market, but we had a GSF expectation of around 81% for 2020. It was slightly below the market expectation, but at the end, it was slightly higher than our effective GSF, which was 80% for 2020. We had already zeroed out our energy balance for the fourth quarter of 2020, and there was a deficit. We can see this on the fourth graph for the months of October to December. There was a deficit, and this deficit is basically caused by a worse GSF. This does have an effect for us, increased prices in purchasing power, but due to how we had zeroed out the balance before, this was not significant for CESP. Finally, we have to reiterate a couple of other aspects. This was a year in which we managed to zero out our energy balance in a more efficient fashion than the previous 2 years. We ended up purchasing, as you can see in the last bar, 317 average megawatts throughout the year at an average price of 204 BRL. This price is 17% lower per megawatt hour to the price we had last year, which was 247 BRL, which gives us some efficiency. Finally, as I had said, we zeroed out our energy balance with the 90% of exposure already closed, as I had mentioned before. I'll now give the floor to Marcelo de Jesus, who will continue the presentation of our financial performance. Thank you. Good morning. So we'll now continue our presentation showing some of our financial results on slide 12. We are now presenting the results of our cost and expenses management program. So starting with expenses in buying energy. In the quarterly comparison, we can see that for the fourth quarter of 2020, We purchased more than in the fourth quarter of 2019, basically due to two factors. First, trading operations resumed in 2020, and secondly, due to our seasonality strategy, which had a lower physical guarantee this quarter. This led to an acquisition of 343 average megawatts, which is 40% higher than what we saw in the fourth quarter of 2019, at an average price in line with what we saw in the fourth quarter of 2019. On a yearly basis, we also see an increase in the absolute value spent on buying power, also due to two factors. First, similarly to the trading operations, we had a higher expense in buying power to service a higher volume in sales. This led to a higher buying volume in 2020. It was 29% higher than 2019. However, it's important to highlight that the average buying price in 2020 was 17% lower than what we had in 2019, which confirms our efficient power balance management, considering the other expenses and costs and administrative costs. We saw a reduction in the during this quarter and during the year. And this is a fruit of our reorganization and our new management strategy, which led to a reduction of the number of employees, mostly seen during the PDVs, which we've already discussed in previous quarters. When it comes to third-party services, we also saw in the yearly comparison a reduction of around 30%. This was due to the reformulation of our processes, reviewing contracts. This is all a part of our transformation agenda. Specifically, in the quarterly comparison, we saw an increase of 3 million BRL. This was due to contracts that we signed at the end of 2020 to accelerate our digitalization agenda, and also our ESG platform, which we'll discuss soon. Continuing on slide 13, in the upper left-hand corner, we see our net revenue growth, which was seen in a comparison to the previous quarter and to the previous year. It was a growth resulting from basically three factors. First, the trading operations. Secondly, higher sales volumes for contracts in 2020. And finally, readjusting contracts based on IPCA or based on the currency exchange. So, a combination of this growth in revenue and continued efficiency in balancing our energy balance, as I said, leads to an increase in our EBITDA in the order of 35%. So, from 752 million BRL to an EBITDA a bit over 1 billion BRL in 2020. Looking at the quarterly comparison, there was a reduction of 40% in our EBITDA, which is basically due to the seasonality strategy. So we had a lower allocation of physical guarantees in the fourth quarter of last year versus 2019, as we discussed in the costs and expenses slide. This important growth in EBITDA also provided an operational cash flow of 743 million BRL, which is a conversion index of 73% for our cash adjusted EBITDA. So that was a strong cash generation for the company, and it contributes to the company's cash balance of about 700 million BRL. Continuing on slide 14, we discuss the company's net results for 2020. Considering our adjusted EBITDA, as we saw in the previous slide, we had a depreciation and amortization in the company, and the financial results were strongly impacted by a correction for our contingent liabilities and also the effect of the company's debt. What we would like to highlight is the positive effect from income tax, 1.5 billion BRL, which is due to the constitution of the remaining balance in the company's fiscal credits. This was due to CVM 371 being suspended. This was a normative instruction which last year limited tax credits to a term of 10 years. This normative was suspended, it was removed, so this limitation no longer exists. And the concession period for the company is now completely valid. So we expect to use the tax credit for 15 to 16 years, which allowed us to constitute all of these tax credits, which led us to a net income of 1.7 billion BRL this year. So with that result, the management proposed to pay proceeds, 850 million BRL, of which 150 million would be interest on own capital to provide tax savings, and 700 million BRL in dividends. The total value of these 850 million BRL will be proceeds per share of 2.59 BRL per share, which is about 9%. Slide 15 discusses our capital structure. It continues to be robust, as we can see. The company's leverage is above 1x net debt to EBITDA, which reflects the company's commitments. Until 2028, we will not have any relevant amortizations in the company due to the renegotiation we had in infrastructure debentures. This also changed our debt profile. 83% of our gross debt is IPCA indexed, and 17% is CDI indexed. Continuing on slide 16, I'd like to give you an update on the pension plan liability effects. Last year, according to CPC 73, on December 31st, 2019, according to this methodology, we recognized liabilities of 837 million BRL. When we look at 2020, the benefits of this pension plan are updated by GPDI. So it suffers an influence of IPGM, which had a major change this year, a change of 23% this year. So this growth in IGPM increases the benefits. So the liabilities go up, and the positive result for that plan or for that portfolio, plus the increase in the discount rate for NTN-B, were not enough to offset the growth of this liability due to how unbridled it became from IGPM. So there was a net variation of 1.6 billion BRL. So the balance, according to this methodology, would be 2.4 billion BRL. I'd like to remind you, as we've said, when we posted the 2019 results, is that this methodology is not the same that Previc uses, which is the methodology that would show a cash impact. The difference between these methodologies, as I had said before, is a difference in the discount rate for the liabilities. According to CPC 73, it's calculated based on NTNB at the end of the year. But based on the Previc methodology, the discount rate would be the same as the one expected for asset profitability. So according to the Previc methodology, it's higher. It would be 4.8%, while with the CPC 73, it would be lower. It would be about 3.2%, a bit over 3%. So when we compare both methodologies, these liabilities go from 2.4 billion to 888 million BRL. This balance, according to Previc, is what we need to look at to assess the company's economic impact. But I'd just like to note that this 888 million BRL liability does not represent a cash effect for the company. It doesn't even represent a commitment to equalize for the company with this deficit seen in the pension plan. Because as you know, we've announced that we are looking at mitigating measures for this deficit risk. The measures are ongoing. The migration process has been approved by governance agencies in Divest and are now being analyzed by Previc. We expect these mitigation measures to be approved by Previc in around July to August. And that is when we will be able to start a migration. After this process, if there is a migration, the liability is going from a definition plan to another plan reduces, so this deficit will no longer exist. And what I mean by this is that any residual deficits for the company to have any provisioning plan will only be calculated after the migration process, which should begin in August and conclude around October or November. So these 888 million still don't reflect any obligation to equalize. If this loss is still there after the migration, if it is higher than the technical limit established by Previc limitations, then the company would need to equalize it. But this is not the case yet. We'll continue to follow up on this process and inform the market as it moves forward with all transparency it requires. I'll now give the floor back to Mario, who will tell us about our ESG platform and tell you about our initiatives for 2021. Thank you, and Mario, you may continue. Thank you, Marcelo. So to continue on page 18, we see the main initiatives that CESP has taken in sustainability last year and the ones we will have for this year. Last year, we had an important initiative to identify the sustainable development goals from the UN, which would be a priority for us. So after this reflection, after this activity, we identified nine priority SDGs in three fronts. And we have already had important activities in these three fronts. The first of them is being environmentally proactive. In 2020, we have al had already certified our power as environmentally clean. This was done through a Xyrex certificate. Now we sell CESP power to our clients with a Xyrex certification. The second point was that we continue to analyze the main environmental risks that the company has. And finally, we are very active in conserving biodiversity. CESP works through fish farming, and we also donate native plant species for reforestation. In terms of local and human development, we also have to highlight a different activity that we have in our cities and towns. Since last year, we've been investing in human development, and we've started some initiatives to foster public education there. Another important point in this front, and I remember having mentioned this to you, is labor health and safety in CESP. So we want to place the company at a benchmark position for health and safety, and we've sought that very clearly. So one of our goals for 2021 is to start some inclusion and development programs, again, in our areas of influence. On page 20, just to wrap up, I'd just like to list some of the most important initiatives that we have in three specific fronts. Still connected to our social and environmental platform, to sustainability. With these results in 2020, we are also posting a yearly report on an integrated report. Our board has also just approved a sustainability committee to be formed. It will be made up of members of our board and outside members to foster and talk to us about all of the initiatives and environmental governance and sustainability areas. And we finally have committed to the global UN Compact. In our strategy, we have consolidated a trading company last year, and we're now expanding carefully but ambitiously to the free market. And we want to advance a more diverse client portfolio. This is one of our goals and one of the most important fronts that we will have in 2021. Finally, I'd like to just mention the efforts we've made in the company's digital transformation to reduce risks, to be more focused on management. And here I'm talking not only about operational risks, but all the other corporate risks for the company. And we also want to be very quick and very focused on efficiency and results. So I'd like to thank you for your attention, and we are now open for the questions and answers session. This will be the second part of our call. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the questions and answers session. If you'd like to ask a question, please dial star one. The first question will be asked by Carolina Carneiro from Credit Suisse. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. I have a couple of questions, actually. First, about the point you mentioned during the call on the recent events with the expert and the Três Irmãos lawsuit. If you could tell us, of course, if you can, an idea of what the next steps will be like and what are the possible due dates. So do judges have a term to nominate a new expert, and what is the scope of their work? Will they need to simply review and analyze the data collected from the previous report, or will they have a new analysis? I'd just like to understand what can happen from now on. My second question is about The energy sale that you just had now. So if you could give us a better idea of what it was like. What is your strategy? Are you having shorter contracts for energy? And what kinds of clients are you looking at? Are you expanding your current client base, or are you just using the portfolio that you've been using from the past? Thank you. There's a scope of things that we have been able to find out. We were surprised by the news, this unfortunate news of his passing, but what would be the expected procedure after that? It's a bit relative here because, again, it will depend on the judge, but what we expect when this happens is for the judge to nominate a new expert and for this expert to analyze, along with the judge, how appropriate it is to change the previous report. So we're going to be following up on that very carefully, obviously. We'll have to see what the outcome will be, but the new expert will see if they will continue the previous report, if it's valid, or if a new report is required. This is an answer we don't have yet, so we'll have to wait a bit. If we hear about anything that is relevant about the Três Irmãos case, we will bring them forward to you. Regarding energy sales, what we realized from the second half of 2020 is everything we did was within our policy. So we're open to products. We have been focusing especially on basically 3 years that are about 5 years away from us. So 2024 to 2026. This would be the optimal moment for trading for SAS. Of course, we're not disclosing the effective price, but what I can tell you is that from September to October 2020 until now, these long-term prices have been recovering. And the other prices in this period I mentioned from October until now are at a good average between 150 to 170 BRL. So it's around 155, 175 on average per megawatt hour. So this is what I can tell you. Regarding the clients that you asked about, we are expanding our base. We're focused on many good clients and a concentrated portfolio. We're starting a dispersion. We're starting to decentralize this portfolio from the top to the bottom. So we're starting with medium-sized clients. And of course, this is a process that's moving forward in 2021. But it will continue to be done carefully. So we need to look at credit, guarantees, and products. Okay, thank you for the answers. Gabriel Francisco from XP Investments will ask the next question. You may continue, sir. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to ask you about a couple of things. First, you distributed proceeds, and this was in line with your cash reduction strategy. And of course, you were following all of your policies. So I'd just like to know if in the future, if things remain constant, if your cash generation continues to be strong, if this will take place again and if it will be recurrent. Of course, we know that there are other fronts. We know that there are issues related to liquidity. And now my second question is what you're thinking about SASB strategy for the middle term. So you've done a good job cleaning up the house, reducing costs, personnel. Looking at your liabilities, and this strategy has been very fruitful. So I'd just like to understand, you know, if the board has approved any strategic plans for 2025, if you're looking at any growth guidance for the middle term, and if there's anything that you can tell us. That's all. Thank you. Thank you for your questions, Gabriel. Starting now with the question on dividends. Cash generation in the current year is an important criteria for dividend payout, but it's not the only one. This is also related to our cash, other cash allocation perspectives, and it also has to do with our contingent liabilities and what stage we're in, if we're expanding and growing. So until we have more immediate growth plans, it would not make sense to build up cash. So until we go to this new stage, until we decide to expand, it would be reasonable to imagine that SASB will continue to pay dividends. So this is our main criteria. It takes in account, of course, other aspects such as cash generation and so on, but we will see about that. About your second question, yes, we do have an agenda. This is transparent to the entire market, and we are preparing SASB to be a consumption platform. Of course, it's a very long agenda. There are many important fronts, but we are close to being able to have our own discussion on our potential growth. In 2021, what might change from the previous years is that we're now willing to look at potential targets in the market, and as things become more pertinent, we might have a better discussion with the board. Of course, whatever commitment we had to growth will be transparent and responsible. We're not looking at any active M&As, but we're very close to that conversation. We're close to becoming more assertive on that. Great. Thank you. That was a very clear answer. Juliano Agergi from Brush Bank will ask the next question. Hi, everyone. Good morning. Hey, Mario. It's great to talk to you. I have a couple of questions. First, you said that you've equalized most of your energy for 2021. If you could share us what GSF and PLT levels you're expecting for this year, and also how this situation in Belo Monte can change your outlook. So that's my first question. The second question connects to the previous question on growth. There's a couple of things. How can the outcome from the Três Irmãos issue accelerate M&A? When we talk about M&As, there are some interesting things here. You mentioned 1.5 billion in tax credits. So an M&A could accelerate the use of those credits. And also, I think you seem to be thinking about stock options related to growth. I'd also like to know a bit more about how fast you can grow, and if you can give us some more color on the Três Irmãos issue and how it can accelerate. So we understand that you'll require a new expert, and it could be years. So I'm wondering if you would want to settle after a while. That's it. Thank you, Juliano. So you touched on several important things. So let me start with GSF. I think we're going to have a difficult year when it comes to GSF. We came into this year with a strong dispatch above average plus imports. What we're seeing on the water level is not so different from the standard we had in the last 3 years. So we're having low rainfall, and this is combined with a recovery in power consumption. So we're a bit more cautious with GSF. The last figure we published for CCE was 83%. This is our expectation for 2021. But our own figure is far below that. We are looking at 79 to 80% for GSF. So this is something that we need to monitor. It does have an effect on the hydroelectric sector. We're not only recently skeptical about GSF. We've been so for a long time. So we need to keep a close eye on that. Regarding the Belo Monte issue, I think we heard some good news, right? We heard some good news this week, which was, at least according to the public data that I've been following on, it seems that they have found a deal between the company and the ministry. And, I mean, this was what was expected. So with this deal, Belo Monte will tend to normalize its power production, which is very important for this time of the year. And we believe it will become a bit more predictable. But the weekly dispatch regime that they have is still unpredictable. There's a lot of speculation in the market. It may have been resolved this week with this deal. So that's quite positive. And of course, that is all because of the government and Belo Monte. So I think the uncertainties are now in the past. Considering Três Irmãos and how that can be accelerated, I think the resolution helps us significantly. Of course, it accelerates a discussion in capital gains, of course, but I don't think that it will determine how the discussion on capital allocation will go. It accelerates it, but I don't think it's determinant. I don't think it would be an obstacle in celebrating a deal. So a deal has always been on the table, and we continue to assess it, even now with the new information on the expert's death, the delay. This is all in a daily equation that we often debate here on the Três Irmãos suit. We're paying close attention to that, and we are looking at a deal. Of course, I can't tell you about it. It depends on our own decision, but what I can tell you responsibly is that we are paying close attention to that. You mentioned preparing the company for growth. This is related to activating fiscal credits and so on. Well, we need to be very transparent with the market. This is just a new stage in SESB's preparation for a new growth platform. So our tax credits are all on balance. The extension of our debt terms, this accelerated digitalization process, they're all factors in this. So as directors, and this has been said before, this is not new. A part of our remuneration comes from a long-term incentive, which is related to the share. So, of course, it's long. It's a five-year incentive, and we are connected to the future of SESB. So this is something that is not new. I think that we are aligned, and as soon as we have results, we'll be very transparent about how this is going. Thank you, Mario. Thank you. Andre Sampaio from Santander will ask the next question. Andre, you may continue. Good morning. I have a couple of questions. First, I'd like to ask about Diverti. You mentioned a migration process, and I'd just like to confirm if what you meant by that was a migration for people who are in defined benefits to defined contributions. Is that what allows you to align both methodologies to the Previc methodology? That's my question. And I'd also like to ask about tax credits. You mentioned that this was extended to 15 to 16 years, but this is only related to the Porto Primavera flow. Is that right? My last question is about your energy balance in 2021. You said that you've already contracted 90% of the power. So can you tell us what the price for that energy was, or is this still confidential? Thank you for your questions, Andres. So let's start with the last one on the energy balance, and I'll let Marcelo answer your other two questions. About the 2021 energy balance, we are going to publish that information in the next quarter, so as soon as we finish March. And you'll hear all of the terms for the 2021 energy balance, even the average price. So we just have to wait a little bit longer. But I can tell you that based on what we've seen so far, we will continue to be more efficient in 2021 than we were in 2020, and just as we have been increasingly efficient in the past. So we are going to continue to gain efficiency based on the 90% that we've already contracted. So you'll know about all the terms by the end of this quarter. Hi, Andre. Good morning. Thank you for your question. So starting with Divest, yes, the mitigation measures are related to the migration from participants from one plan to another. It's similar to what happened with A&E recently, a migration plan. The difference is that our plan, 99% of the participants are already retired. So the average age is 70. It's a different population, which in our point of view may help the migration process. It may be favorable to the migration process. As I said in this call, this process is being analyzed by Previc. So we're going to start communication so that all participants know about how this process works, what are the expected terms, what is advantageous, what is not. But opening up for options and communicating The communication strategy will only take place after the Privy is approved. But it is a migration plan so that we leave, you know, what we call defined contributions, which have an impact on our deficits. So considering the tax credits, our expected taxable income does come mostly from Porto Primavera, and the term did not consider 30 years. It was actually lower than that. So 16 or 17 years has already been enough to show that it will completely offset the losses. What we always get asked is how this will help if we continue to grow. Well, it will help it to be offset. So our growth will be will have benefits from this, considering our taxable income. So I hope that answers your question. Thank you. Thank you. If I could ask a couple of follow-up questions. Your understanding is that if there is a migration from all of the retirees, if that would make both calculations equivalent, or would we still have a difference between the two methodologies that you used for that calculation? Considering tax credits, you mentioned that there was a need to have taxable income to use that tax credit. So will that create incentives for, you know, looking at large-scale hydroelectric assets instead of renewable assets, which would seem more obvious? Okay, let's start with your question on pensions. The migration would not change the difference between the two methodologies. The difference there is connected to the discount rate. With CPC 3, the discount rate is relative to the end of the year, but Prelink looks at the entire portfolio and provides a discount rate on a part of it. What happens with the migration is that this liability subject to future losses will reduce in both methodologies, both in Prelink and in CPC 7.3. But the difference between the methodologies will still exist because there's a difference in the discount rate up to the point until that rate converges. But that's not the case yet because Prelink looks at a five-year average and CPC looks at the rate at the end of the year. Considering the tax credit with high and creating incentives for certain assets, that's not true because that would add hydrological risk. It would not be in line with the same value generation that we have in CESP, but we cannot deny that taxable income assets, that is, hydroelectric assets, would have accelerated benefits. But this does not necessarily create an incentive for us to look at these assets in a better light. Okay, thank you for the answers. The next question will be asked by Bruno Reis from Bradesco BPI. Bruno, you may ask your question. Hi, everyone. This is just a quick question on the news about the expert passing away. I'd just like to understand what effect this may have. From your understanding, will this make anything change Would you need another report? Would you have to change all the data that was in the previous report? Hi, Bruno. Thank you for your question. It was very difficult to understand your audio, but I think I understood what you were saying. But if I don't answer your question completely, please let me know. So you're asking what is the worst case scenario for the Três Irmãos case, I guess, if I understood it correctly. If the report needs to be redone, let's look at this hypothesis. If a new expert would have to create a new report, this would be the worst case scenario for Três Irmãos. If I understood correctly, you're asking if new amounts would be discussed. No. What has been said is based on an ordinance which was proposed at that time, which was proposed from the union to CESP in 2014. So that all the calculations are based on that, including the experts' calculations. It did not involve any lens or any channels. So I don't think there are going to be any radical changes to the values. The values are known to both sides. The biggest discussion in terms of value in Três Irmãos is not related to valuation, but rather what installments could be in the valuation. So the historical data that we reached was 1.7 billion, and the expert came to 1.9 billion in the same historical basis. So it's a difference of 200 million, but that's within that 10% range that we had defined. So there's not a lot of disagreement there. The disagreement that we've had is that the union has never agreed to pay more than the value of the land. So, excuse me, not anything higher than the value of the plant. So it does not include the lands or the channel. So the worst case scenario for them, to be very transparent, is that there will be an even greater delay to come to a final resolution. So I don't think that it will affect the values. So I don't know if that answers your question, Bruno. No, I understand. Thank you. Thank you. The next question comes from Felipe Andreoli from Verde Asset. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I have two topics I'd like to discuss. First, on trading. I understand that if I look at the difference between the figures I'm seeing in your consolidated figures and the controller, I'm seeing the trader. So I'd just like to understand if that's right. And if it is right, I am seeing results of minus 50 million BRL by looking at the EBITDA. So I just like to understand, I mean, I think you've mentioned this in other calls, but I don't really remember. Is this the result of a liquidated contract in the fourth quarter, or are there any other effects? And regardless of the quarter, what led to this reduction in 50 million BRL? So what I mean is maybe you were betting on having a better rainfall, better hydrological factors, and, you know, I'd just like to understand what happened there. And of course, I'm assuming that this 50 million figure is correct. My second question is about solar power. You mentioned this in your call that the growth plan is going in that direction. But in terms of solar power, we see many players with new projects. And it seems like things ramped up in the last months. We even had some companies filing their IPOs. And we're starting to hear about projects at relatively low price ranges in comparison to the free market. So I'd just like to know a bit more about that from you. How would you sell this energy contracted for the next years if you have to compete with solar sources, just as you have to compete with wind sources? So I'd just like to know a bit more about that. We know that you have the energy to sell, but what are you thinking about there, both for contracted energy and for your future growth strategy? That's all. Thank you. Hi, Felipe. Thank you for your question. So let me answer your second question first, and then Marcelo will answer your first one. Considering solar projects and long-term plans for the company. So considering efficient solar projects in scale and location, when we look at this in our models, we have some trouble reaching, and of course this is the best case scenario, we're not looking at stress cases, but I'm referring to the best case scenarios. We have a lot of trouble seeing a consolidated base that will provide appropriate returns. We know that returns are diminishing, but it's very difficult to see returns on the prices listed. It's very difficult to see the return there. Of course, each player is going to have their own model, their own point of view, their own ambition, and their own risk in those projects. But we believe that in order to have a decent competition, you know, energy would still need to be far below 150 BRL. And of course, I have consulted with people who understand renewable energies very much, consultancy companies and so on. So that's my point. We've always had risk. Price risks have always existed. Solar is growing and will continue to grow. It's going to be an important part of the Brazilian grid. It's still low, but it will grow very fast. Wind power has grown a lot and will continue to grow. And you can see that even despite that, long-term prices for all players, and here I'm talking about the Southeast market, did not go below 150 BRL. So our contracts are all above 150, and I mean this range between 150 and 160 BRL for the five-year target. Even for 10-year prices, we've seen prices around 140, 145 BRL. So the only thing that COVID has brought is a concern on the credibility of the counterparts. So they started paying more attention to that in our we felt that in our clients here. They're starting to pay attention to other suppliers. And some clients are trying to avoid execution risks or solvency risks. So the consolidated prices are not under question. So let's continue with your second question. So you asked about how we look at the consolidated figures with the controller, if the difference is the trading company. Yes, it is. I do believe it is. We finished activities and we started our activities in 2020. We didn't have the trading company working in 2019. So if we look at the difference in the results, we have to separate trading operations, purely trading operations, but we also have operations from the trading company that originated the generator. So we can't see this in the financial statements, but we need to separate these two operations. So looking specifically at trading activities in the fourth quarter, what we had as a negative effect was the market pricing for the 21-22 position. So this is not a consolidated loss. The trading activity for 2020 was actually positive if we look only at trading. Of course, I'm separating this from the contracts that came when the trading company was started. So we had a positive result for the year. At the end of the year, the open positions for 2021 to 2022, with all the volatility we had a negative market position, but this is not a loss yet. We have been working on this from the beginning of the year, and we've already reversed this partially. So the price listed in the past was still negative. Okay, everyone, thank you. Thank you. The next question comes from the webcast and is asked by Victor de Oliveira from Ibiúna. He asks, considering your change in Vivest plan, when will we hear about if the beneficiaries have accepted the plan? Okay, Victor, this is Marcelo. According to the timeline we've been following, the process is now being analyzed by Previc. We don't expect Previc to not approve it because it's very similar to what Enel did before and had also been approved. So normally Previc takes 60 working days to approve a plan, and it may make demands, so it may request additional information. Normally, we consider 260 working day periods for Previc to accept it. So considering that scenario, it should be approved around July to August. That is when the process will be approved, and that's when we'll start giving the option to all the participants. Normally, this is a period that takes 3 months, and it can be extended. So our expectation is that we'll have a better understanding of how it's accepted and how much has been migrated in the fourth quarter of 2021, at the end of the fourth quarter. This concludes our questions and answers session. We'd now like to give the floor to Mr. Mario Bertoncini for his closing remarks. Thank you all for listening to our call. We got very good questions, so thank you very much for participating. We're optimistic. We expect a difficult year this year. We see the hydrological risks, but we're very optimistic about the year nonetheless. Thank you very much, and we'll continue to be in touch. This concludes the results call for CESB. Thank you for listening and have a nice day.